Welcome to Dark Mode, the podcast that brings you sage advice from two technology experts. And that's not just what we call ourselves, it's what our moms tell people when they have no freaking clue what iPhone to buy, because they're so gosh dang confused. I'm your host, Luke Miani.
And I'm your host, Noah Rubin. On this show, we take questions from listeners, attempt to answer them to varying degrees of success, and maybe even have a laugh or two along the way. I did the intro right this time.
Let's go.
Last time.
Not that's that we need all right. To, we don't have to.
We don't need to litigate that. But yeah, it's okay. We're off to a good start.
Yeah, things are going well. And I would also like to point out, this is our 3 week in a row anniversary.
three week in a row anniversary. That's
yes, sir.
Momentous. Can you believe it? Occasion.
Oh yeah. Wow. No, we're really pulling out all the stops this time.
Very exciting, very exciting. I guess we have stuff to talk about. That's the good thing.
Like,
we tried this 3 weeks, you know, last month or whatever, maybe it would be a little rough, but like now we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, so it's good.
Yeah, and we better get to it because unfortunately, I think our streak might be broken because I don't think I'm going to be. I'm working on a pretty big project for the car channel next week, and I don't know that I'm going to be able to make it for the show.
And then there might be something after that, so we might have to talk about
really?
That a little bit. Maybe we'll see.
Oh
we'll see.
No! What about after that? The 23rd. I think I'll be
23rd.
Here.
The 23rd. I don't think
Uh-oh.
I'm gonna be here.
Oh no! All right. Well, anyway, I hope you guys enjoy our March episode. This is the only one.
It might be. Oh no.
Oh dear. Well, you know what? We've never had any pretenses about professionalism on this show, and don't fact check that, because you will not find anything. Don't go back and look about us saying that we're professionals, and definitely don't listen to our intro. That is not what we say every single episode. I will say this though. This week is a pretty big week. We've got a couple of things to get to. Number one, of course, we've got the iPhone 16e. Number two, I think we're going to get another announcement this week. I think we're probably going to get a MacBook Air. So we've got to talk about that.
Yeah.
That, I think, should be a pretty brief discussion. And then we promised at the end of last week's show, thank you, Noah, for remembering, that we were going to pop off on AI.
Yeah, that is definitely going to happen.
So let's start by popping off on this sucker, the iPhone 16e. And I gotta say, no, I was gonna try to be nice. All right, the only nice thing I could think of is I do like the design. I think it's clean, and I like that it's kind of a recycled design. Obviously, it's got the frame of an iPhone 14, the screen of an iPhone 14, but we have action button USB-C. That frosted back glass looks good. I really like how the single camera looks. I mean, it is a super clean and minimal design. We don't even have the ultra wideband cutout because, of course, it doesn't have it. So, hey, at least it's clean, right?
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. I feel like especially the back, that single camera, because we've had these big camera bumps for a while now. Even on the non-pro models, they have the big camera bumps, even if they don't need them. I guess the 16 camera bump is a little bit smaller, which is not bad. But that is a very small little camera, and it does look very clean. I feel like personally for me, the rest of it looks kind of old. It is clean. It looks kind of old, though. But the back, the back does look nice. I will agree with you there.
So that concludes the nice things about iPhone 16e section of tonight's show. Now let's talk about what the hell were they thinking? Because here's the problem. We discussed it when the announcement had happened last week on the show. And really the problem is, why? Why? Who is this for? And why? What I talked about in my video today, which if you haven't seen it, you should watch, was that Apple doesn't really seem to be trying to make their products feel that special anymore. And one of the examples that I brought up, and I don't know if you remember this ad campaign, Noah, was the iPod Nano. Okay. So the fourth generation iPod Nano had this really cool campaign called Nano Chromatic. They had obviously, you know, a bunch of the different colors for the iPod Nano, which were not new, by the way. It wasn't the first time that they had done colors. And they had like these paint drips, and they turned it into, it was a store display. It was an ad. That. It was posters and billboards and bus stop poster advertisements. It was really, really clever. And the other example that I brought up was the iPhone 5C, right? The iPhone 5C is actually a really great analogy for what the 16e is trying to do. They took a flagship. Well, actually, it wasn't even a flagship. It was an iPhone 5. And instead of selling it at a discount, they needed to cut costs more, so they put it in a plastic case instead of the chamfered edge aluminium that Johnny Ive was all obsessed about. And, I mean, on its face, it's, hey, would you like last year's phone with a cheaper case? Here you go. But you know what they did? They made it exciting. They made it interesting. They said, it's a style icon. They had those fun cases, remember those, with the holes in them and the contrasting colors, so you could kind of mix and match and like create a whole vibe out of it. It was a really it was a playful, interesting way to market that phone. And the 16e, it feels like they just couldn't even be bothered to pretend that it's interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like it's very, I mean, their whole marketing thing is they're basically saying it's the iPhone 16 experience, which as we will as we will talk about, it isn't really, but it kind of is. So they, but yeah. Apple says it's the iPhone 16 experience at the least expensive price. So I agree with you that they're basically just saying like this, there's nothing fun or interesting about this phone. It's just the cheapest one. So it's like, just buy this phone. It's the cheapest one. Like whatever. Like we don't care.
Right. Like they literally, I mean, what was their home? I think the, if you go on the Apple's page, I think it is, yeah, latest iPhone, greatest price. That's their tagline. Really? Yeah. Really? That's all you could come up with? Like even the iPhone 15, I brought up an example of the ad campaign that they ran where I think it was called Snaptacular, where they had all of the, because the diagonal camera, right? And they had them all lined up with all the different colors. It was a cool visual. And it highlighted a unique design feature of the iPhone. Now, was it unique to the iPhone 15? No. It was also on the 13 and the 14. So it was like, all right, I guess I'll allow that. Even the iPhone 16 doesn't really have, I mean, I don't know that there is an iPhone 16, like an iconic billboard campaign. They just have like the pros, and all it is just the thing that says pro. With the Apple Intelligence glow. I have not actually seen, to my knowledge, a single iPhone 16 regular ad. They just haven't even tried.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like a lot of, you know, to go with the advertising, like a lot of the advertising now is like Genmoji. I see the Genmoji like billboards and stuff all the time, and the video ads and stuff. And that just like doesn't do it for me. Like I get what they're going for. They're trying to be like, oh, it's fun and you can express yourself, and like that's what they're going for. But maybe it's because we're so bombarded with AI, or it just, maybe the Genmoji just don't look that good, or whatever it is. I just see that and I'm like, ugh, like really, Apple, are you really, is this really what you're doing right now? I don't care about this. It's like such a far cry from like the fun advertising they used to do, the stuff that you were bringing up before.
Yeah, and it's like, because realistically, a lot of the appeal that Apple products have had, frankly, is marketing. And, you know, you can downplay that. Certainly it was at the time. I don't know if you remember when the iPhone 5C came out, but people were not happy about it. But love it or hate it, it was a really, really effective way to sell that phone, and they sold a lot of them. So, you know, you can't love Apple without respecting their game when it comes to marketing. And right now, it feels like the product is lackluster. and the marketing is lackluster. You can't do that. And the real question then, I guess it kind of boils down to, is why? It's the clarity factor. Because even when Apple has released some of their most uninteresting products over the years, I'm talking like from Steve Jobs' return in 97 through like the late 2010s, every product that they announced felt purposeful and had a clear message of like who it's for. The iPhone 5C was pretty clearly for people who wanted kind of the latest phone, but were a little bit, you know, lower end, a little bit more fun, a little bit more casual, right? That was very, very clear. The 16e does not have that clarity. And really, I'm trying to find this comment here. I saw somebody basically summarize exactly why the 16e exists. Oh, here it is. JK7K says, we got an iPhone 16e for $200 through T-Mobile. Good deal. That is the function of this phone. It exists purely for carrier subsidies and promotions where they say, get an iPhone 16e on us when you switch and save with T-Mobile. Like, that's literally the exact text that you're going to hear in ads in about 2 weeks. Right? Mark my words. And like, how are people supposed to care about a phone that is meant for carrier subsidies?
Yeah, and like, I get to an extent, like, okay, this phone, if this, okay, this phone is meant for, you know, carrier. So that's definitely a good point. Like, it's, you know, they want to have the cheaper phone. And in this case, it's not even that cheap of a cheap phone. So if they're not getting the people that are looking for a cheap phone, at least they'll get people that are doing these subsidies. So I get like, okay, at least it serves a point, but it's still, yeah, it's like, why are you, I guess Apple, yeah, they're really just saying like, we don't really care about this thing. We're just gonna put it out there. And I think part of it is just like, maybe Apple has gotten complacent. Maybe they're just, I mean, not that they can't grow anymore, but they're so big and so well known and so well established. And especially like the iPhone is such a mature and like well-established product that like, I don't know, maybe they don't even care that much anymore. Like, it seems like they don't. With the marketing they're doing, it seems like they don't. And maybe they don't need to care as much anymore, but then it makes us care less because it's not as fun.
Right. And I think that's a big part of the appeal to Apple. You're kind of touching on the other aspect of their marketing scheme, right? It's not just to make the products feel more special than they are. It's also the brand. It's the image. And like, I don't inherently have a problem with making a budget-ish phone designed to appeal to mid-range, low propensity consumers who will buy it through a carrier subsidy. That's not inherently a bad thing, but it's not typically how Apple treats their brand. And we've talked about this a little bit as it relates to cars. And you kind of cash in on that brand image, and it only works for a certain amount of time. So like, the example that I would say is the iPhone 16e kind of reminds me of a Samsung Galaxy A25, right? It's not a particularly interesting or groundbreaking phone, and that's okay for Samsung because that kind of works with their brand image. But Apple doesn't really operate that same way. And I think that as much as it might be fine now, right, the iPhone 16e I'm sure is going to sell just fine and will be a successful product for them. The problem that I think they might run into, and this is not just because of the 16e, this is because of a lot of the moves that they've been making. I fear that Apple right now has saved up a lot of brand cachet and they're spending it right now. They're using that brand to cash in on, frankly, lazy products. iPad Mini 7, AirPods Max with slightly different paint and USB-C, iPhone 16e. Heck, honestly, even the iPhone 16 Pro is a little bit of a phoning it in type of device, right? And I feel like you can get away with it for a while, but when you spend your brand image and you kind of rest on your laurels, it doesn't typically end well. Take a look at Cadillac. That's a great example. Cadillac, during the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, was the car. The car in America, right? And what did they do? They said, we're on top of the world. No one can touch us because, I mean, it was so... I don't think people nowadays understand how big a deal Cadillac used to be in the U.S. because right now they're kind of nothing. But, I mean, there's a reason that you watch any old movie or TV show, people will say, like, you know, oh, this new air fryer here, this is the Cadillac of air fryers. It was literally a synonym for the best, the highest quality, most premium, most desirable. And now Cadillac is nothing. Nobody gives a crap about Cadillac. Even some of their good cars, like the CT4 Blackwing, which a lot of car guys really love, they're never going to be able to get back the image that they spent wasting it on what their new reputation is of old man cars. And it seems silly to think that Apple could do something like that. But, you know, we're talking about brands that need to endure. And Apple exploded in the 2000s and 2010s. And, you know, that. But you go back before then, the 90s, Apple was almost out of business. It's not impossible for a brand to fall off. And I don't know. I don't want to be alarmist. I realize that this sounds a little alarmist, but the reason that the iPhone 16e bothers me is not necessarily just because the phone is mid. It's because of what they're doing with the brand.
Here's my thought. I think part of this is we've talked a lot on the show about how iPhones are lasting longer now. So people are keeping their phones for longer. They're not upgrading as frequently, you know, all that stuff. I kind of feel like that might play into this a little bit because maybe Apple, I'm not saying that they should or shouldn't, but maybe Apple isn't going as hard on the marketing because they're not trying to get as many people, or they know that they're not going to get as many people. Like in the old days when you would upgrade, you know, every 2 years, that was pretty typical. You'd have a 2-year contract with your carrier and you get a new phone every 2 years. And so back in those days, when it was, you know, more frequent upgrades, like they would maybe try harder with the marketing, or they would feel the need to try harder. I guess now if people are keeping their phones for 3, 4, 5 or more years, Apple's mm-hmm. like, okay, we're not going to get as many people. Even if we go all out on the marketing, we're not going to get as many people to upgrade. So we're like, okay, we don't have to go that hard because the people that have an iPhone, I think I kind of feel like, and I'm not saying this is a good thing or that it's a good strategy, but I kind of feel like they're just thinking we want to keep, I guess they want to get new people to come over too. But like if they can keep the people on the iPhones, you know, if you have an iPhone 12 or 13 right now and you're looking for an upgrade and you're looking at the new phone and you're going to factor in the stuff that's happened in the past few years and it's going to add up to something, the current phone and the current new feature and whatever matters, but maybe not as much as the full context. And I think as like once someone becomes an Apple user, if you're like an iPhone user, and a lot of people, like when they're an iPhone user, they stay iPhone. Some people will go back and forth, but a lot of people won't. And once you're an iPhone user, you're kind of just waiting until, you know, your phone is too old or there's enough new features over the years. And maybe Apple is getting a little bit lazy with that. They're like, you know, if people are going to have their phones for longer, we're not going to try as hard. And maybe that's part of, you know, how it ends up like this.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that you're right because there is less incentive to have an absolutely gangbusters phone when most people nowadays are, I mean, like you said, they're buying a phone, they're keeping it for 5 years. And honestly, from talking to my friends here, the reasons that people upgrade their phones are almost never to do with features. And that's just the world that we live in now. I was talking to someone today, this morning, who She was going, I want to get a new phone, like, now. She has an iPhone 13 Pro. She's like, okay, I think it's time for me to upgrade, and I want to do it now. And I was like, well, what's the rush exactly? Because, you know, now that we're in March, we're in that zone where it's going to start. I'm going to start recommending the people wait. I'm going to start recommending, hey, hold off until September. You know, the usual advice of get the new phone to get more features for your money, or wait, and the phone you want right now is going to be cheaper. You know, classic. And I'll give you one guess. Guess why she wanted to get the phone now as opposed to waiting.
Can I know which phone? Like, did she know which phone she was looking for, or just
probably just a 16 Pro? She likes the Pros, so a 16 Pro, just because it's the newer version of what she has now.
I'm gonna guess it's something like the color or something like that.
That's a good one. I've heard that one a lot. Nope. I'm sorry, Noah, for baiting you, because you would never guess this reason, and that's why I brought it up. She wanted to get a new phone now because TikTok just got added back to the App Store, and in 30 days is when the extension on the TikTok ban expires, and she's worried if she waits too long, then she'll get a new phone when TikTok isn't on the App Store and she won't be able to re-download it.
What?
Yep. Deadass. That was the motivation for getting a new phone.
That's very interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, I guess I can't really blame Apple for not trying. If that's what motivates people to buy the latest phone, then yeah, honestly, I wouldn't put a ton of effort into creating some crazy new feature. If people are only buying it based on their battery health or TikTok's availability or the color, I mean, why would you try any harder than that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I obviously Apple has a lot of data, so I'm sure they have, obviously they know how well the phones are selling, and I'm sure that they do market research and they see why people are upgrading. And you know, there's a lot of reasons like that. There's a lot of people in the chat. So we had, you know, iPhone XR, an iPhone 13 mini, a 12 mini, an SE3. So there's all these, and these are tech people. And, you know, some tech people keep their devices for longer than normal. A lot of tech people upgrade more often. But like, there's a bunch of people here too that have these older devices too. And, you know, obviously Apple knows that. They know how many active devices there are, and they've probably seen, you know, from all this research, they're like, also partially the phones aren't as interesting anymore. I mean, we've talked about this a lot, that like each year is an incremental change. So it's like, I think it's between that and the sort of market trends that it's like, I think Apple could make exciting and interesting ads, and they could do a lot more with the marketing than they are. But maybe, I guess they don't care as much, and there isn't as much to do. So they're just doing what they're doing.
Yeah. And look, I guess to some degree, I can't blame them. And also, I think it's what's interesting is that it's different for the iPhone and the Mac. Like, for example, this week, I think it's pretty likely that we're going to get an M4 MacBook Air, because Apple seems to be settling into a pattern of waiting a little bit to update the Air. I assume it's for manufacturing cost and yields, right? The chips that they, when they announced the MacBook Pro and the Mac Mini and the iMac, those are the first batch of chips. They're more expensive. You know, make those for a few months until the manufacturing yields improve and the cost comes down, and then you can put it in the MacBook Air at higher margins. Easy enough. And the thing is, the Mac has always been allowed to have a longer process. A longer time between updates. And I'm starting to wonder, like, what lessons can we learn from that to bring to the iPhone? Because in the old days, I think that the Mac has been in a position where people buy it fairly infrequently for a while, right? You can go back all the way through the 1997 PowerBook G3 Pismo, right? And you'll find that Apple has had the same strategy. There's redesigns and there's spec bumps. And honestly, the Apple Silicon spec bumps are far, far better than what most of the Intel spec bumps were. I mean, you go back to the unibody MacBook Pro. The first unibody MacBook Pro is Core 2 Duo. The second one, a slightly different Core 2 Duo with a slightly different graphics card that also had failure problems. And then they had they introduced the Core i5 and i7, which was a decent update. Then they had quad cores in 2011. And then another update with just like slightly different configurations also in 2011. And then in 2012 with the Ivy Bridge, and right, like those were comparatively much less significant updates than we've had just in the last 4 years on the current generation of MacBook Pro. The M1 to M4 Pro MacBook Pros are an incredible jump. And I mean, you'll find it here. Like, nobody's complaining about the fact that it's the same exact thing, just with a different chip. You know, and when they brought the nanotexture display to the MacBook Pro, I was pleasantly surprised, because quite frankly, I didn't expect them to do that. So what is it about the Mac that makes that acceptable, but on the iPhone, it's not? Well, the Mac is kind of expected to be a multi-year purchase, but a lot of people now keep their phones as long or longer than they keep their MacBooks. So there could be an argument to be made that if Apple switched up their strategy, and look, I know this is crazy, and I think I've mentioned it before, but like, what if Apple did an every other year design, or an every 3 year design, you know, something where they give you like a little minor spec bump, and then they do, I mean, kind of like the S year, but on a little bit of a longer time frame. I would legitimately support Apple straight up skipping an entire year with the iPhone just to make them more exciting.
I think it's a really interesting point, because I haven't really thought about it like that. That, yeah, the iPhones, you know, like we said, the iPhones are lasting longer. People are keeping them for longer. So they really are becoming like the Macs. And you could even argue that the Macs are now lasting even longer than they used to because of Apple Silicon. So that's something that we haven't fully realized yet. But at the very least, you know, I have my you know, M1 MacBook Pro from 2021, and I still have no desire to upgrade that. I mean, it's an M1 Max, and it's pretty well spec'd, but even still, I have no desire to upgrade that, and that could probably last for a very long time. But I think it's an interesting point that I wonder, you know, first of all, the fact that like people think about the phones differently. I think part of the reason is just because, you know, that's something that Apple makes a big deal about. You know, every year in September, there's going to be an iPhone event. There's going to be a new iPhone. And I guess in the phone market, there, you know, a lot of competitors put out, you know, Google puts out a new phone and Samsung puts out a new phone. So that's kind of expected. But I do wonder if there could be a shift now that phones are lasting as long as computers have for a long time. If there can be, maybe it's not just Apple, but maybe it has to be a whole market shift in order for Apple to be okay with it. But it seems like the consumers, right, if the consumers are shifting to keeping the devices for longer, then if the companies respond to that and they shift their marketing and change up their marketing and their strategy a bit, then maybe it can be sort of an industry-wide change where we start thinking about phones a little bit more like computers, in the sense that we're not expecting something super exciting. Because I agree with you that like we just have these expectations because that's how it has been in the past. And that's why we expect something, and then we're disappointed when it's not exciting. But like, I agree, you know, if Apple skipped a year and every other year they did, you know, they did it, it would save us money, and it would save, I guess, some disappointment or, you know, whatever emotion it is. And like, yeah, maybe it would lose Apple money, but I think it would make, what if they did like a, you know, they did the new iPhone 1 year, and then on the off years they did the E model, or they did something like that. Like, what if there's some way they could work with that?
No, I agree. I think that's, and look, somebody just pointed out here, if they did that, I would not have nothing to make a video about and we'll go broke. And yeah, you're right. But I'll tell you what, I would take that trade-off because, I mean, to my mind, it sounds more intriguing to have, like you mentioned, a two-year cycle where the off year was, what if they even did pro year and non-pro alternating? Like, let's say in the fall of this year, we get the iPhone 17 Pro. Next year, we get the 17. And then, so there's a phone every year, but the phones that come out are with more time in between. I feel like you'd get the hype up and people would actually be able to keep up. Because that's the other thing is a lot of people don't even really know what phone is out right now. I don't know if this is just because this is kind of coinciding with the time that we're, you know, getting older, but like it felt like in the early days of the iPhone, I'm talking like 4, 5, 6, 7 type time period, every year the iPhone was a big deal and it was like in the cultural zeitgeist. Whereas now it feels like it's flying by so fast that people will go like, wait, what number are we on now? Maybe that's just because, you know, now we're on 17 instead of 6. Fair enough. Maybe it's because we're, you know, a little older than we were 10, 15 years ago, obviously. But it does feel like that rapid pace is, the rapid pace blended with the fact that the phones all look the same kind of makes everything feel kind of insignificant.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about like the 16 Pro or the 16 series. I don't think we were very impressed with, especially the Pro models. Like we were not very impressed this year. I'm not impressed with it. I still, you know, we've talked about this before, but I agree that if they had waited, I would have been perfectly happy with my 15 Pro Max. I mean, I guess I gave it to my dad, so I'm glad that he has it now, but like, you know, that notwithstanding, if I still had the 15 Pro Max, I would be perfectly happy. There's really not that much of a difference to the 16 Pro Max. And then next year, or I guess it would be this year, later this year, we would get a phone that would have the things from the 16 Pro, and it would also have whatever new stuff is going to happen this year. So you'd get twice as much stuff as you would have gotten in a typical phone in the past few years. And then it would be more exciting. And I feel like, I wonder if they could capture, because we talk about, you know, we're saying like people are keeping their phones for longer, but I almost wonder if the every year thing creates more fatigue that people are like, if it were every 2 years, there was something a little bit bigger. Maybe you'd say, oh, it's been 2 years. Normally I would keep my phone for 3 or 4 or whatever years, but like this phone's pretty cool. Maybe I'm actually going to go and upgrade to it. Whereas if it's every year, then it's easy to say, oh, this one's not that interesting. Oh, this one's not that interesting, and keep waiting for a long time.
That's a really good point. I think that's exactly true because you're right. I mean, let's say you have an iPhone 14, because I've seen this argument of people that have 3, 4-ish year old Pro, especially phones. They go, okay, well, I got the 14 Pro. The 15 wasn't that different, and the 16 didn't feel that different from that. So therefore, the 16 doesn't feel different from the 14. That gradual step up makes each phone, I feel like people kind of look at it as them all blending together. Whereas if you had like the 14 and you've had it for 2 years, and then you get a 15 that is A, more different than it otherwise would have been, and B, you've now had your phone for 2 years, you might be more inclined to pay attention to that instead of, to your point, going, eh, well, the 15 wasn't that different, the 16's not that different, I'll wait for the 17. And then honestly, even getting to the 17 and waiting again. Like, you know, people are now waiting 4 years because the phones don't feel any different, whereas you might be able to get them in 2 if it did. But I'll tell you what I think might also be happening with the 16 specifically, and that is the AI. The AI, I think they leaned really heavily on, and it is not the move. I do not think that it's working. I think that Apple, quite honestly, missed the wave. Like, we've known for a while that Apple tends to hold off on the trend and do it better than other people, but I really think that they were too late and underwhelming.
No, I agree. I mean, AI hype is still, I guess, pretty high right now. I don't know why, because I mean, we're going to talk about AI. So let's not go into that whole thing yet, but I will
let's go into it. Let's transition.
I mean, look, well, the last thing I'll say about this part is, and I guess this is part of the new part, but like, okay, AI hype is apparently still big right now. I don't know why, because it seems like a lot of people are kind of tired of it. Whatever, it's kind of big mm-hmm. right now still. But I, like, you see these things that, like, you know, ChatGPT, OpenAI, and Claude and whatever, like all these new models are coming out and they're one-upping each other and they're doing crazy things, and like people, the big trend lately has been it's called vibe coding, and it's where people literally, they just talk to an AI, and they're like, some guy on Twitter, he told AI to build him a flight simulator, and the AI wrote this whole, you know, HTML JavaScript flight simulator, and he put it online, and he tells AI, oh, add multiplayer, and it writes all the code, whatever. So all this stuff is happening, and meanwhile Apple is like, well, we can summarize your notifications, but we're not going to do a very good job. Or like, we can generate some emojis, but they're not going to look, you know, very good. And they're like, oh, all the cool stuff they want. Did you see the thing? I saw a thing, I think it was today, that said that the big Siri update is delayed until 2027. Or 2026 or something. It was like the big overarching thing, like, got super delayed. Did you see this?
No, I did not see that. Dude, they literally launched the iPhone 15 saying, hey, AI is a thing now. So you mean to tell me that their entire marketing campaign for the 16 Pro and the 16 is going to, the entire phone is going to be irrelevant before its own marketing campaign comes true?
Yeah, what? That's the thing. Yeah, and I just crazy. Sent you an article that hopefully it's the right article, but yeah, it's crazy that like Apple, like their whole marketing has been about AI, and it's like, oh, it's the AI phone, it's the Apple Intelligence phone, and they're not just the iPhone, mm-hmm. but like across their whole lineup, they're really pushing Apple Intelligence, and it's like, it's really not that much. Again, I feel like I've said this before. I don't even have Apple Intelligence on my phone because my phone is in Spanish and Apple only supports North American English, which is crazy, by the way. That like they only support that mm-hmm. language. But I don't even have Apple Intelligence, and I could just switch my phone to English and like have it or even just try it out. I have no desire to do that. I don't even want to bother doing that for Apple Intelligence. It's like it's that uninteresting to me.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're exactly right. I think we are now reaching a point where I am going to call Apple Intelligence the biggest blunder that Apple has had. I mean, I'm trying to think of a bigger one, quite frankly. This is a massive, massive failure. It sucks donkey dick. It's horrible. It, first of all, doesn't work. Second of all, even if it did, it wouldn't be useful. And third of all, it's embarrassing that you announced these features a year and a half ago and they're still not out. Like all of the actually useful or interesting features, which again, might not even work the way they were described because the ones we do have don't, and they're still not available. And to me, it's so late. And it's so underwhelming that it really makes me doubt Apple's competence, quite frankly. And we're already starting to see comments like this. This is a sentiment that I have felt a lot. I'm just tired of AI being thrown around by everyone. I got perfectly fine without it in my whole life, and it's not yet life-changing. These companies need to chill with it. And I fear, not just talk about Apple Intelligence here, but AI in general is, it's just woefully out of touch with what people actually want. And I think that every single company right now that is working on Gen AI is kind of missing the whole point, quite frankly. I think the most compelling argument that I've seen for AI was personal intelligence, personal context, whatever they called it, which was, again, a fairly minor feature, right? It's not overt. It's not in your face. It's not Genmoji or Image Playground. It's, hey, you want to know what time your flight was? Let AI go through this personal context. And if it was in a text message that you sent 2.5 weeks ago, we can find it. That is useful. But to be quite honest with you, I don't have any interest in any other AI application. I just don't. Because first of all, it's not trustworthy. You, if you're asking it for information, there's too many errors for me to be able to comfortably feel like I'm able to trust or rely on it without going and Google search it, in which case, why use AI in the first place? It's dangerous, quite frankly, with deep fakes, audio fakery, and fake videos that start to look more and more real. Why? What? Like, sorry, I'm going to derail us for one small second here because I want to talk about AI video generators. This okay. is the pinnacle of stupidity, all right? AI generated videos. I think that they are purely a bad thing. I cannot think of a single benefit to AI generated videos. The very most generous thing that I could say about them is if I'm a YouTuber and I want to make some B-roll and I don't have B-roll for something, I could use AI to make something. I mean, just literally just something that goes on the screen and you look at it and that's it. That is the most generous term that I could possibly imagine. Because, I mean, let's game this out, okay? Right now, AI videos don't look particularly good, okay? It's impressive for the first 2 seconds where you're just like, oh, okay, a computer was able to generate what looks like a camera motion and a subject and all this stuff. Cool. What's the goal, okay? Sure, make some B-roll to put in your videos. Well, as people point out, my YouTube recommendations is full of AI slop. It becomes almost instantaneously recognizable as AI. And that immediately cheapens it. As soon as it becomes, oh, that's an AI video, I am less engaged in the content. It's immediately less impressive. It's immediately less engaging. And the end goal of this technology is only destructive. It is, oh, hey, let's not hire camera people and actors. We can just have a computer program do it instead and do it cheap and do it bad. I genuinely don't. And look, I'm looking through the comments here. I'm trying to see if people have examples of when AI videos are good. Here's one. What about talking to your family after they passed away? No, I don't want to do that. I don't want to have AI reanimate a dead family relative so that I can have a fake conversation with a computer program that looks like my grandmother. No, I don't want that. There's not a single example that I have ever seen that has been compelling.
Yeah, I think the sort of core issue, and you basically touched on this, but it's like, if you're using AI to do anything that is that's factual or that it requires like actual mm-hmm. facts or knowledge, AI is not reliable because, and I guess, you know, we're talking kind of about like LLMs in this case. You know, you go on chat, you ask ChatGPT a question. I've tried that a few times, by the way. If I try to search something, you know, on Google and I don't get good results, I've tried maybe once or twice to ask ChatGPT and it just makes stuff up. I think a lot of people here probably know the basics of how LLMs work, but the basic idea is that it's basically just a text generator. It's a next word generator. It's like the little thing above the iPhone keyboard. And, you know, people make the joke where they keep tapping that option of like what it thinks the next word is going to be in it, and it makes like a weird sentence. But that's literally all it is you give it a prompt, and it takes that prompt and it says, what's the most likely next word that should come after this? And it generates a word. Okay. And then it takes the prompt plus that word that it generated, and it says, okay, take this now, tell me what the next word is going to be. And that's why when you see these LLMs and it looks like they're kind of typing out their answer word by word, I mean, maybe partially it's for show, but that is actually how LLMs work, is that it generates a word and it puts that back in, and it generates the next word and puts that back in. And so by design, it's just generating text. It's saying, what's the most likely next word? What word, next word makes the most sense here? It's not what's the correct next word. You know, what is the message? What's the overall message that is true and factual and useful and helpful? It's what's the next word that makes the most sense, whether it's true or not. That's how these things work, right? And so if you're trying to do it for anything that is like real or factual, like if you're trying to do research on something, or if you're trying to tell AI to go do something for you, personally, I don't trust it. I don't think you trust it either. I think a lot of people don't trust it because it can make mistakes. It doesn't know, you know, what it's doing. It's just generating words. It's doing the next most likely thing. And then I feel like the cases where it is actually potentially useful is when it's generating something that a human is going to look at. So like if you know, Apple is the Apple Intelligence writing tool. So you're writing an email and you say, make this shorter, make this longer, make this more formal, make this more casual, all those kinds of things. That's okay, because it's not, you're not looking for a correct answer. You're just, it's sort of helping you make edits, and then you're going to read what it changes, and if it makes a mistake, you're going to go fix the mistake, and like those things are okay. But I feel like those are the things where you don't really want it, or maybe some people do, but I don't, because if I'm like writing, there's a joke, I don't know if you've seen this meme, but it's a meme of like someone writes a message, they're like, you know, do you want to go to dinner tonight? And then they put it to the LLM and it makes this whole thing of like, would you like to join me for dinner? Blah, 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 this whole thing. And you send it to the person and then that person puts it into their LLM and they're like, simplify this. And then it comes back out and says, do you want to go to dinner tonight? It's like something like that. It's like a joke that like both people are using the LLMs to make it bigger, make it smaller. And it's like, I don't know, at the end of the day, for those kinds of applications, the more creative things, I personally at least don't want to use AI for those. I want to use my own voice and express it in my own way. And then for the things that are actually, you know, factual, I just don't really trust it. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. And that's kind of, I think, why I like the idea of personal intelligence more. Because at the end of the day, I think using AI to replace creativity is just a bad idea. Like, I know that there will be people that will find it useful. Honestly, most of the use cases for AI text generation, AI video or image generation, I think are net negatives to society. For every example of someone saying, hey, I was able to generate this relevant picture that I put in my presentation for school or work, you're going to have a totally other example of somebody deep faking a politician, or making a fake video, or, I mean, just putting AI slop on Facebook that confuses boomers. And, you know, like there's, or as someone just pointed out here, doing your homework, like that is scary. That is dangerous, dude. Having AI being able to do people's homework, that is a literacy nightmare. That is, hey, I don't need to know anything. I can outsource this knowledge to a computer. And the thing is, even if the computer was right, I mean, look, not to get all doomery here, but if the AI is using human intelligence to learn, and then we stop gaining intelligence because we use that, that's a feedback loop. Doesn't take a lot of generations before all of a sudden, hey, there's not... You know, if scientific papers start using AI, then the AI is using AI to train the AI, and it's just a total feedback loop, and the quality, the reliability only goes down. So that's a dangerous precedent to set. It's dangerous to have AI in school. It's dangerous to have AI in creative fields because, I mean, look, it's, again, it's a feedback loop, right? If the AI is using human artwork and human video to learn, and we start then adding more and more AI into that mix, it's only a matter of time before AI is training AI based on AI data, and it's just an AI loop, and that, it just won't get better. It won't. No matter how perfect you get AI, you're still going to have a lot of these problems. And I just don't see it ending well. I don't see people responding to it the same way that tech people do. I think that is the biggest thing for me. It might have a place in some instances. I could see it being... I think that maybe right now what we're seeing is just this huge explosion and everyone's like, I want to make money off of this. I want to use this. It's like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do with it? And maybe in a couple of years, it settles down into a more background role. And there are useful like back-end reasons to have AI, like going through huge data sets or synthesizing information or, you know, looking for patterns in, I mean, pretty much anything that requires analyzing huge amounts of data, right? Fair, fine. But the general public, I guarantee, is way less engaged with AI than a lot of the people in this chat. And even then, it looks like from what I'm reading, the majority of people here in chat tend to be at least a little bit wary about the uses for AI.
Yeah, and I will say, like, we're talking about AI, and there are definitely uses for it. And like, look, a few years ago, before this sort of big boom of generative AI and LLMs and all of that stuff, like there was AI, and we've talked about this in the past about how Apple has used AI. Like, this was before Apple Intelligence came out. We were talking about how like Apple doesn't have this overt generative AI thing, but they do use machine learning and intelligent, like, you know, an AI stuff in their products and other places where it makes sense, right? And mm-hmm. You know, I took an AI class in college, and it was like a higher level class, but it was pretty open. We learned about, you know, we learned about searching and like search algorithms and pathfinding and you know, like vectorizing words and sort of a very basic version of what an LLM would be. But like, there are a lot of applications of AI. AI is such a broad term that there are a lot of applications that make sense. I think when we're talking about AI here, we're talking generally about the sort of generative AI LLMs, like the stuff that's been big now. So just to give some context, but also just to say that like AI has been this big thing for the past couple of years. It's been shoved down our throats for the past couple of years. And I think that we're kind of tired of it. Like, I get, you know, if these things exist, like, let's say, you know, AI, there's a bunch of versions of AI, a bunch of different types of AI, and some of them have been around for a very long time, and a lot of them serve, you know, a good purpose. But these new LLMs and generative AI came along. And if that was just, you know, another use of AI and there were some cool tools and some things that you could do with it, that would be cool. But the fact that, like, it is such this big thing that everyone is shoving down our throats and every product has some kind of AI thing, and it just creates this big hype cycle and you just get tired of it. Because, like, the core thing, the big thing of LLMs and generative AI and generative images and video, whatever, it's cool, but it's not like it's been made to be like so much bigger and of a thing than I personally think it is. And I think that's part of why we're so tired. So we're not talking about, like, you know, machine learning and these instances where it really makes sense, but it's just this stuff that's like so superfluous and extra, but yet it's being shoved down our throats so much that it's, you know, it's tiring and frustrating.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think, you know, and there are people pointing out that, you know, AI does have some uses and some tools that are useful. Like, right here is a great example. Content-aware fill in Photoshop. That is an example of a useful tool. But again, That, I think, I think that maybe part of what you're touching on here is that is a useful tool, but in itself isn't as big as what it's being made out to be. And I feel like if I'm a creative and I'm, you know, using the new version of Photoshop, that generative fill to retouch photos or to continue patterns or something like that, like, yeah, I might use that as a basically way to save time versus the more manual methods. But the reason that those types of features exist is because of these generative image models that I think are a massive, massive negative impact. Like, do you know what I mean? Does that make sense? In order to get that generative fill tool that is useful, it's part and parcel with these very easily accessible fake image generators where you put in a prompt and it gives you an entire image and they get more and more realistic. It becomes harder and harder and harder to tell what's real and what's not. And that's where I think the responsible implementation of these tools is being completely overlooked, because I would agree that content-aware fill is a useful use case for generative AI. But where do you put the guardrails on it? I think that's a big concern, because quite frankly, I'd rather manually, you know, clone stamp tool my image than have AI generators that are being used for really scummy, scammy, or nefarious, or straight up dangerous purposes. And I feel like a lot of what the public facing AI craze is doing right now is leading to like these big cash grabs. You know, people are, and you can see it. You can see it very, very easily. It's becoming extremely common to, you know, just see images on Amazon of products or images, entire websites where it's very, very obvious. Like, oh, okay, this is AI generated, right? But what happens when it's not obvious? What happens when it is so good, as people say, you know, it's getting better every day. What happens when it is so good that you or I, even more dangerously, I, with no programming experience, can just sit down, tell ChatGPT to create from scratch an entire sale website, and I can just use that to harvest credit card numbers? Just that is the lowest effort scam that I could possibly come up with. But without generative AI, I would have had to go through quite a lot of effort to do that. I would have had to learn how to use a web builder, learn how to, I mean, at the very least, I guess I would have had to learn, you know, Squarespace, right? Not even anymore, right? And I think that is where I think you find some of this move fast and break things becomes a problem. Because for all of the potentially useful tools that come along, there's a million different ways that you can misuse them. And people are just not considering those things.
Yeah. And I think there's also, even beyond just the like misuse of the tools, there are some questions. First of all, people have brought up in the comments too about like the environmental implications of, you know, running these servers that are doing this complicated work, and right. And it's increasing emissions. Or, you know, these image models or video models or text models, all these models that are trained on, you know, artists' work or, you know, writers' work or all these things, and without their permission, that they didn't give permission for it to happen. And mm-hmm. So there's a lot. I think it sort of the way that it came out, like, it's such this big thing and we're kind of tired of it. But like, also, even from the beginning, like, it I think it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, that they weren't, that just, you know, the training on other people's data and stuff like that, that was kind of a big thing. But I do have an interesting example of AI, I guess. So, and this okay. is sort of a good and a bad, right? So the good, so like I use I use an IDE, a coding environment, a coding program that has like an AI autocomplete feature. So I can start typing a line of code and it'll suggest the end of that code. And generally, it's pretty good. And it also saves me from writing out some boilerplate, because when I'm writing code, I personally do consider coding to be an art in its own right, and that's something I could go on about. But when I'm writing code, you know, a lot of the times it's a simple thing where I know what I'm writing, and I'm just trying to get it down, and the AI can sort of help with that. There's also a nice thing where if you like copy and paste something, it'll change it to adapt to the context that you pasted it into. So it does these sort of like nice things. And so that's like the one AI feature that I actually really like. But then there's this thing a couple days ago that someone, and I saw this on Twitter, but someone made this program that runs on your computer, and when you do an interview, like a tech job interview, this program will solve the problem for you that the interviewer gives you. So in case you're not familiar, the way that these programming interviews work, so if you're trying to get like a job in programming, basically you'll have like a call with an interviewer, and they'll give you a problem, and you have to write some code. You have to write an algorithm to solve the problem. And then you test the algorithm. You talk about the performance and trade-offs and all of that stuff. And so someone made this program. It runs like completely invisibly on your computer. And I don't know exactly how it works, because I never like, you know, actually tried it, obviously. But someone made this program, and they used it to get a bunch of offers from like reputable companies, because they did these interviews and their program, you know, did the interviews for them. And so then, you know, imagine you get a job that you, and now the guy said the reason why he did this was because programming interviews are kind of dumb, which I agree. They're the kind of programming you do for an interview is very different than the kind of programming you do in a real job. So he was kind of sending an F you to the system, being like, you got to change this because it's not good. And I agree with that to an extent. But like, imagine, you know, getting hired for a position that you are not qualified for, because you use this AI tool to like cheat on your exam. That's like the homework thing, but you know, up to another level.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. And I guess if we want to kind of wrap up and synthesize our views, I don't think either of us are saying get rid of AI altogether, get rid of LLMs, don't use it. But I think there is a very real I think it's about responsibility. There are real consequences to irresponsible AI, and there's a real fatigue to the amount of AI focus that there is right now. Straight up. I mean, look, Apple Intelligence is a great example of this, because nobody that I use gives a rat's ass about Apple Intelligence. Nobody that I know uses it, cares about it, even frankly, knows that it exists, to be honest. And a lot of these, like, they're putting AI keys on laptops, they're putting chat tools in everything. They're, you know, those aspects of AI are very visibly cash grabs and are very annoying for most people. I think the reality of the situation is most of the use cases for AI are unsexy. It's things like filling in boilerplate code, generative fill in videos. Maybe, I mean, for video editing, there's really not a lot of AI right now, but being able to like cut down my A-roll, you know, anything that's sort of the boring grunt work that doesn't require skill or creativity, AI can fit into that and genuinely be useful. But the vast majority of what AI is being advertised and implemented in at the moment is gimmicky, quite frankly. So I don't know. I mean, I tend to think that within a few years, the public will kind of become weary about it and less responsive to it. And hopefully that will mean that the flashy, ooh, AI, ooh, Apple Intelligence, ooh, will kind of die down, and it will just start to be implemented as back-ended features, right? Because I think that if you look at AI as saying like, hey, here's your new IDE, and it has the ability to fill in boilerplate code as opposed to saying the new IDE based on AI. I think that very soon we're going to have that shift where just saying it's got AI won't be enough. And you need to talk about, okay, sure, AI as a tool, but what's the feature? What does it do? And that is, I think, I hope, the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, I think once AI sort of the hype, which is, I think a lot of it is artificial. I mean, when ChatGPT first came out, it was like a big thing. It was very exciting. I think these days, at least some amount of it, I mean, there's new exciting things coming out still, I get it. But like, at least some amount of this is artificial, and it's just the trend is AI, so everyone's doing AI. I think once it dies down a little bit, you know, it was perfectly fine before the big boom. AI was had a lot of uses, and it was, you know, powerful, whatever. And then there's this new stuff that's good for a specific subset of things, and that's great too. And once the hype kind of dies down a little bit, and these things are still going to exist, but they're not going to be the core focus that everyone really cares about above all else. And then, you know, once all of that stuff sort of, when we move on a little bit from this crazy hype, and it's, we're not as fatigued, then it's not going to, it's going to be something that's just there when you want it. And if you don't want it, then that's fine too. And that's where I want to get to.
Oh, can't come soon enough. It really can. And you know what? On that note, a great comment here. Time to watch White Lotus. Got a new White Lotus episode. If you haven't seen the new Severance episode, now would be the time.
I'm watching that tonight, actually. Severance.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, the you haven't episode. Seen episode 7?
No, I watch it on Sundays with my with my friends. I have to. I've heard it's
crazy.
How do
you wait that long?
I don't. I mean, I have to wait. But I heard it's crazy.
Wow. Well, text me after you watch it because, dude, this week is nuts. It is so good.
Yeah.
You can tell AI did not play a part in this episode of Severance. I'll tell you that. No AI was anywhere near Severance.
And no AI was anywhere near this segue to ending the episode.
Whoa! Now we're cooking. That was a great segue. And as usual, I have been your host, Luke Miani.
And I've been your host, Noah Rubin. We will see you next time, and have a great night.
Take care.